This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. Of course, this is Enterprise Biz Bytes, and we're with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. I'm joined in the studio today by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
Yes, these ladies will be picking everybody's brains at home, and my brains at home. We'll be talking about things like staff evaluations done in a slightly different way.
Yes.
They're going to be done by arguably artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story we'll be kicking off with. Then how Google will be referring to their different assistant voices using colors.
Mm-hmm.
How AT&T want to overhaul HBO, saying that it's not profitable enough. Mm. Perhaps all the dragon money has disappeared. Number four, how the App Store has made Apple $40 billion in the last 10 years. Finally, wrapping up with a story about how the UK are to require all new homes to have electronic vehicle charging capabilities.
Mm.
Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with the show like you all did yesterday, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going to have a discussion about how IBM will be using AI to predict how its employees will perform. This should be interesting.
Yes, I mean, it could be the most forward-thinking employee performance review system around, if you think about it, right? Mm. IBM Watson is what we're talking about here.
Yep.
And Watson has been to the Grammys, it's been to outer space even, and now it's going to come into your office. I think that's what's going to happen now.
Jang, jang, jang.
So rather than simply judge employees on what they've already done, IBM plans to use its Watson AI to predict what they're going to do in the future. So you're not only going to be evaluated based on the work you've done in the over the past year, but also the work that you could potentially do for the company in the coming years.
That raises more questions than it gives answers.
Well, let me just go down the article first. Why is this cool? Well, because IBM right now has about 380,000 employees worldwide, and that's
wow.
A lot of performance reviews for human managers to handle, and a massive time investment if they're going to give them the scrutiny that every employee deserves. At least that's what IBM says.
Mm-hmm.
So using Watson Analytics, it will look at an employee's experiences and projects to infer the potential skills and qualities each person might have to serve IBM in the future. Watson also scours IBM's internal training system to see if an employee has gained new skills. Managers then take Watson's assessment rating into account as they make bonus, pay and promotion decisions. And to motivate employees to learn new skills, more employees are starting to focus on the future during evaluations. I think there was a survey done by about over 2,000 organizations, and 40% of respondents say they are planning on or considering changing the focus of performance reviews to the future. Right? So, and according to a report from Bloomberg, IBM claims Watson predicts future employee performance with 96% accuracy.
Wow.
How do they know that?
Well, what Watson does is it essentially looks at the kind of training that you've done during the year.
Right.
Okay. What you're focusing on, the kind of projects that you've taken on.
Okay.
And then what projects that you could potentially take on in the future, what kind of training that you've already taken and what skills that will help you with in future projects, and kind of like says, okay, hey, you deserve a bonus based on this. You know, we would like to invest in you, and so we're giving you a bonus based on this. You'd be getting a more sizable pay rise.
Wait, so
because
the,
of this?
So the bonus is based on what you could be doing in the future?
The
yes,
training,
it takes into account, yes.
What, okay, what if, I don't know, what if you wanted to do a particular project, but there is no training available to take you down that particular line, would be my first question.
Mm-hmm.
What if you are an employee of several years, and you have maxed out all of your training, you're at the stage where there's not really an awful lot you can do. These would be questions that I would be thinking about.
Yeah. That is where the human interaction comes into play, because what Watson does is it analyzes what you could potentially do, projects you could be potentially involved in the future, but then it comes down to that that human manager that you have to deal
right,
with
right.
To take you, I mean, to answer those questions, I guess.
Chris, what do you think?
I mean, my question is also, let's say, you know, you get those bonuses and then you get that based on, let's say, what it predicts that you're going to do in 2 years, but then a year later, you leave the company.
Mm.
So, like, do you still deserve that bonus, like, that it predicted for you based
good
on
question.
That,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, estimate of time that you're going to be staying with the company? Like, how long of a time does it predict in the future, you know, especially if that affects your pay?
Mm.
I don't really know how it's going to juggle that.
I don't have the answers for that exactly, but what I can tell you is, I think this suits where IBM sees the company heading.
Right.
Because they feel like the skills that you have today in the job that you do today is only going to be half the skills you need for the projects that you're going to take on in the future.
Right.
I know that IBM, I did an interview with IBM, if I'm not mistaken, sometime earlier this year or last year, about how they're moving into not white-collar jobs or blue-collar jobs, but they've introduced something called new-collar jobs, where you get to essentially undergo training or acquire skills for a certain project. And then, you know, then when you take on another project that requires higher skills, then you upskill yourself.
Gotcha.
And that gotcha. Allows people, even if you don't have a degree, you can take up a certain course that will give you the skills to take on those projects, and they will accept you. And they do in-house training as well.
That is interesting.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
So, okay. They are entirely getting rid of stuff like, you know, the peer-based reviews and that kind of stuff then,
right.
which a lot of people would say are fairly old-fashioned and can be manipulated in one thing or another. And they're completely making it an emotionless decision, which, as you know, a lot of people will know, if you take part in a peer review, you know, there's often, as much as people try and avoid it, there is often conflict due to emotion.
Or even when you have to do that self-assessment
right.
evaluation,
right.
right? You know, you're always going to be biased to the work that you've
course,
done, right?
Of course, yeah.
yeah.
Okay, I'm interested to know what people think about this. You know, how would you feel about having your pay reviewed by AI? You know, your bonus is determined by what the AI thinks you will be doing within the next year. Let us know, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Are you comfortable with AI deciding whether or not you get a bonus and a pay raise? All right. Okay, story number two then, how Google will now be referring to their different assistants' voices using colors. Why? Why is this a big thing?
Yeah, so Google is issuing an update to its assistant service and mobile app today that will assign colors to its various artificial intelligence voice options. So instead of, let's say, picking, I think on Siri for Apple, you pick the voice based on the language.
Right.
So that's how that's done. But for Google specifically, it's choosing by color instead. So the colors have been randomly selected. The colors are only for users in the US using the English language option. But whatever voice option a user is currently using will be given a color, and the colors have been randomly selected by Google so as to not associate any one color with a certain gender or intonation.
Oh.
So
yes.
it's not going to be pink for the woman's voice and
blue
for the man's voice.
Well, we don't know yet, because it will be a random doling out of the colors. So it doesn't actually say like which color is associated with what voice or whatever. We don't know. But prior to the change, Google simply listed its 8 available voices as voice 1 and voice 2 and so on, and alternated between male and female sounding voices as you tap through the list. Now the company assigns a color to each one, and you can scroll through them from left to right in a carousel layout.
Mm.
This seems like a thoughtful approach to avoid the pitfall of using only a female sounding name and voice, as Amazon did with the initial rollout of its Alexa assistant and Apple did with Siri as well.
Mm.
Of course, now you can change the wake word and voice option for Alexa. So I'm guessing you can change the name essentially of it and the options as well. And Apple has added a male voice for Siri 2 years after the assistant's initial launch. For example, my Siri at the moment is male because I think I switched it to English UK or something, and then it became a dude. But it's become...
Hello.
Yeah. But it's become a bit of an industry norm to associate AI assistants with disembodied female voices. I mean, you just think about Her, for example, which is literally a movie about a disembodied female-sounding assistant.
I mean, you know, as much as I try not to think about it, the name Siri sounds female to me.
Yeah, right? So
isn't that because of Tom Cruise's kid? Or something.
Well, I don't
wasn't
know.
Her name Siri? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm
no, not sorry,
pop
Siri.
Culture.
Anyway, but
right.
But the whole point is that what they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of reduce these sort of sociological reinforcements by way of technology. You know, they're trying to get you to not associate a gender of, you know, idea of that to their AI assistant, essentially.
Hmm.
I'm not entirely sure I follow, though. So you pick a color for the voice assistant that you want.
No, so the voice assistants just have colors instead of names now.
Okay.
And then whichever voice just sounds nice to you, you can pick that.
By color.
Yeah, by color.
Okay, so...
So let's say you're scrolling through the little thing, and then you're like, ah, no, the red voice sounds nice. Then you can put on the red voice.
Okay.
But it's not like a him or her or whatever. It's randomly...
Does it change each time you use it, or you once
that,
you've picked it,
you've picked it? I actually don't know. That it doesn't go into a lot of detail about exactly... how it's going to do that, or if it's going to cycle through those colors or something like that. But basically, I think the point is that they wanted to just kind of avoid associating a human element with their AI assistant.
Yeah.
And it's also not without issue, because as you said, if the color pink randomly gets assigned a female voice, it would inadvertently result in reinforcing the rigid gender roles that they're trying so hard to get away from. But I also don't know if, because this is according to an article on The Verge, I also don't know if, for example, it would be randomized for each phone. So let's say like one person's Google phone has red as like a male voice and another has red as a female voice. I don't know what's the how that will work, but they're trying to take like a measured approach to making sure that the AI isn't totally humanized and isn't held to the same weird standards that we hold humans as well.
Okay.
All right. That's about as clear as mud. Okay, anyway, let's take a break. Let's have some music from a Block Party with This Modern Love. Don't forget, though, we started off the show with a story about how IBM are using their AI to predict how employees will perform. The question we're asking you guys at home is, would you feel comfortable with AI determining whether or not you get a pay raise and determining how much that pay raise is? It's looking at what you will do in the future, not how you've performed in the past. Interesting way of doing things. They're kind of muddling the whole system up. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got used to it by now, and now they come in and they said, no, we're doing it entirely differently.
Because they want to prepare for the future.
Yes, and in the future, AI will be colours.
Ah, that too.
Right.
Yep.
All right, time for music. It is Block Party with This Modern Love here on Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with...
Christine Wong.
And Audrey Raj.
If you're only just joining us, we started off with a story about how IBM are using its AI to predict how employees will perform, how they'll perform in the future. And in fact, your bonus and whatever could be based on what the AI predicts. We've asked you guys to give us some feedback and tell us what you think about that. We've had a few messages during the song break. What have we got, Chris?
Yeah, so this is on Twitter from @everbully, and he says, AI evaluation of performance is great. No more backstabbing or bosses remembering only one small mistake you've made and forgetting every contribution you've made just so that he or she can justify not giving you the pay rise or bonus.
Interesting. That, I'm guessing, would also assume that you keep track of everything that you've done as well, and you input it into a system so that the AI can then read that information.
Yeah, right? That's one of the things that, you know, your bosses will tell you all the time.
Right.
List everything you do during the year down, even if it's like a 3-page list, and bring it in during your evaluation so you can like say,
this is what I did this year. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Keep the messages coming in via WhatsApp on 018-789-8899 or on Twitter like Everbole did on at BFM Radio. Right. Okay, next story. It's about making money and not making money and how another company wants to make more money for a company that made a lot of money.
And also it's about HBO, right?
And it's about, that's what
I was about to say.
I was going to get to that. Come on, right. So, I don't know if you know this, folks, but AT&T have been the proud owner of HBO for less than a month. And it is already considering an entire overhaul that would see HBO produce more video than that can compete for the attention of smartphone users.
Ta-da!
Oh.
As somebody else mentioned the other day, it's like asking Netflix to produce more rubbish to produce. Because let's be honest, there is an awful lot of great content on Netflix.
Yes.
But there's a lot of space filler too, right? It seems as though HBO will be following that line. So AT&T...
The Boss Baby series.
AT&T wants to boost revenue both in advertising and subscriptions, even if that means upending HBO's long-time strategy of producing a relatively small number of high-quality shows. Some that we've seen, obviously, in the last few years has been Game of Thrones. We've had The Sopranos. We've had...
Westworld.
Some really, really good content that has clearly had a lot of money spent on it. Mm. So this guy, John Stankey, unfortunate name,
is the
AT&T executive, who's now CEO of the company's Warner Media division, formed after last month's acquisition of Time Warner, described his vision in an hour-long town hall meeting with about 150 employees. And what he went on to say was, it's going to be a tough year. It's going to be a lot of work to alter and change direction a little bit. So it was held at the HBO headquarters in New York. It was hosted by HBO CEO Richard Plepa, another unfortunate name. So both Stanky and Plepa, oh my word, acknowledged that producing more shows would lead to a drop in quality. But they said that they hope to produce more without sacrificing HBO's standard of excellence. They said that HBO needs to attract more subscribers and convince subscribers to spend more time watching HBO. That means HBO must produce more content. Here's a quote. Transforming itself from a boutique operation with a focus on its signature Sunday night lineup into something bigger and broader. They must compete for smartphone for people's attention. He said, look, we need hours a day, referring to the time viewers spend watching HBO programs. It's not hours a week, not hours a month. We need hours a day. We are competing for devices that sit in people's hands that capture their attention every 15 minutes. So we've had this discussion a lot before here on BizBytes about the idea of moving content from the big screen to a smaller screen, you know, the Black Mirror kind of, theme. Now, I don't know about you, but the only time that I choose to watch content on my phone or on my iPad is when I don't have access to a TV, when I'm laid in bed and been too lazy to get out of bed, or if I'm having lunch.
Yeah, pretty much.
So during that period, the longest that you'll probably spend watching on a smaller screen, I would assume it's probably about 35, 40 minutes. Anything longer than that, I think, is a little bit uncomfortable to watch.
I don't know. I think anything longer than 15 minutes is a bit much for me.
I have watched stuff on my phone for like an hour.
Okay.
But that's because like I was like at lunch and something and then eating while I watched like a
long
thing.
So that makes sense, right?
Yeah. But my thing with HBO is that what I think is a bit silly is that if they want to create more content, the cost is going to go up, obviously, right?
Right.
Yeah. First of all. But they have such good content already. I think that maybe a smarter way to go about this, if they want to create kind of a mobile-only content or something like that, is to kind of give like exclusives on like a mobile app or something of their pre-existing content. So let's say you can only watch interviews with your favorite Game of Thrones actors on your phone, right? Mm. Then it would still incentivize people to watch long-form content on their phone without spending that much more money on production costs and stuff like
that. It's interesting you say that because with it not just being like exclusive to the phone, what they're talking about is taking something like Game of Thrones, which, as we know, for most episodes is around about an hour, including advertisements.
Sometimes more, yeah.
Or advertisements. And then what they are thinking about doing is creating 20-minute specific segments using Game of Thrones. But it's not going to be stuff like interviews, and it's going to be actual episodes
content.
Or spin-offs of stuff like Game of Thrones or like Westworld or whatever. That's smart. But you know, that also means that there's going to be a bunch of people who follow these TV shows that unless you're a subscriber to HBO, you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And it's going to end up being repurposed somewhere else, I think.
Mm. I mean, see, so my response to that would be instead of actually having proper episodes, but especially for stuff like Game of Thrones and Westworld where there's a lot of lore, you could make that mobile specific, for example, because you don't necessarily have to have that knowledge to watch the shows on TV, but it's stuff that you could know if you're like a super nerd and you want to get into that. Because I know for a fact I have spent literally hours on a Game of Thrones analysis series of Blu-ray featurettes that they released on each Blu-ray thing, and then someone on YouTube compiled it into like a whole series and had a music and stuff, and that's like 5 hours long, the whole thing. I've been obsessed with that.
Yeah, and then you pass it to me and then I spent like all of 2 weeks trying to go through all 7 seasons of those.
Yeah, so you know what I mean? So that kind of content would be interesting to do to watch on a phone still, I think.
Interesting stuff.
But for me, it's still, you know, quality over quantity.
I agree.
Think if HBO wants to do this, then they're going to have to invest. I mean, AT&T is going to want to invest more.
Right,
into
exactly.
This
I mean, they made $6 billion in profit last year.
Yeah.
Sorry, in the past 3 years. $2 billion a year spent on programming.
Mm.
They've got 40 million subscribers in just the US and 142 million worldwide, right? They need to roll out more subscriptions worldwide. If you did that, then they'd be able to spend an awful lot more on programming. The problem is, it's stuff like access here in Malaysia or what. It's not difficult. It's expensive, you know, for what it provides, I think.
And
I think,
creative, guys.
Exactly. But he did say something. This is from Mr. Plepa. He said his first quote was, our current strategy is not going to be sustainable going forward. But he said, more is not better. Only better is better.
Yes. Oh. I agree.
Nice little quote there.
And this just less than a month in?
Yeah, less than a month in.
Right.
Okay. I don't know how this is going to pan out, you know. Mm. I really don't. I'm really worried about this. Anyway, but at least it's the last season of Game of Thrones. So then yes. It doesn't matter, you know. And if it fails miserably, so we got what we wanted.
No, unless they get us hooked on another show, Rich.
They are doing a prequel to Game of Thrones, aren't they?
Don't say that, Chris.
They are.
Don't say that. You're going to get me hooked on something else. Right. It's time for a short break. As we've been mentioning, we started off the show with how IBM are using AI to predict how employees will perform in the future. Your then bonus is based on what the AI predicts for the future and will give you a pay raise or not, depending on what it thinks you're going to perform like in a year's time. Let us know what you think about this. 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Time for some music. It is The Angels with No Secrets. And when we get back, how the App Store has raised $40 billion in the last 10 years. Small potatoes, right? Mm-hmm. Don't go anywhere. This is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
If you're only just joining us, you can download the podcast a little bit later on from the Apple App Store, which is available, which is the BFM app available in the Apple App Store. More on that later. But we did start off the show with how IBM are using its AI to predict how employees will perform. We've asked you guys to contribute via WhatsApp and via Twitter. We've had a few messages. Christine, what do we have?
Yeah, so this is on WhatsApp from Dr. Kyrie. And he says, they better get the concept right. Bonus is for what you have achieved, past performance, whereas your salary increment is for your expected future performance.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's kind of asking, you know, will the AI take that into consideration instead of mixing your bonus and your salary increments based on your expected future performance sort of thing?
This expert is, Audrey Wright, please
this
answer
This is
that.
Watson we're talking about. Of course Watson is going to get it right.
Uh-huh. I mean, Dr. Watson.
You have a lot of faith. It's as if you're biased or something.
You're ever so slightly biased.
No, I think it's great. I mean, Watson is not going to overlook your recent training. It's not going to forget about your strong sales efforts in the first quarter. And it's not going to judge you for being a Liverpool fan, man.
Oh,
come on.
Ho, ho. I'm leaving that where it is. Okay, let's move on then to our next story. There's going to be a whole bunch of text messages coming in regarding that, you do realize. Aren't you a Liverpool fan?
I'm not saying anything.
You're not saying anything.
It's the World Cup time. Okay, let's talk about.
Okay,
the World
Cup, so we're all on one side. Just out of interest, you know, who? What's your prediction for the final?
You're gonna have to pay me for that.
Oh, aren't you right? Okay, let's move on to story number four. How the App Store has made $40 billion in the last 10 years.
Yeah, at least $40 billion in revenue. When Steve Jobs unveiled the developer kit that would make way for the App Store that we know and love today, he had no idea how big it would one day be. He said back in 2008, "We're excited about creating a vibrant third-party developer community with potentially thousands of native applications for iPhone and iPod Touch." Remember when the iPod Touch was a thing?
Mm.
Crazy. And a decade after it launched, the App Store now holds more than 2 billion apps and is responsible for making the services category, which also includes Apple Music, iTunes, and Apple Pay, the second largest contributor to Apple's revenue, second only to iPhones.
Wow.
Yes. So these combined services have doubled their revenue since 2015, accumulating $1.3 trillion US dollars over the course of 5.5 years, which is insane. Apple doesn't share a specific breakdown of the individual services, but it's possible to decipher figures for the App Store based on what we know. For example, Apple has paid developers more than $100 billion since the App Store's inception. Assuming that Apple traditionally breaks out the incurred amount by giving 70% to developers and keeping 30%, the total amount incurred from the App Store would be at least $143 billion US dollars. And if that is so, Apple has made a minimum of $43 billion over the course of its 10-year life.
So according to the little graph here, Apple's revenue breakdown for quarter two of 2018, they made a total of $61.1 billion. 62% of that was made up from iPhone sales.
Yep.
15% of that was made from services like you've just mentioned. 10% of sales from Macs, 7% from iPads, and 6% from other products.
Yep.
Wow.
Yes.
I mean, some of these apps that are very expensive as well, and I say very expensive. I've seen apps on there for like, you know, I say very expensive. What am I talking about? 100 ringgit. I've seen the largest price one for a long time.
Yeah.
There was an app a few years ago, I remember it, and it was being sold for $1,000 US, and all it was a pretend gold ring.
What?
Yeah. And so you could buy this pretend gold ring and show other people that you had the most expensive app available in the App Store. That's the only purpose it served. And I think it was available for about a month or 2 or 3 months before Apple took it down and said, I can't believe people are actually paying money for this.
Wow.
You know what else I can't believe people paid money for? I mean, I just looked up quickly what were the top, I mean, the favorite paid apps on the App Store, right? And at number one was something called Koi Pond.
I know that one.
Yeah. Which was just pretty much images of a koi pond on your...
That's it?
That was what people paid for. At number two, I understand, was Texas Hold'em. But Koi Pond. Yeah.
Koi Pond was number one?
Number one. This is over the last 10 years, of course.
Yeah. From what I can understand, I did not download the Koi Pond app, but from what I know, I think it's also like, first of all, it's supposed to be a calming thing, and I guess people are very stressed. Second of all, I think that you could choose like what color koi and stuff were in your pond and stuff like that, just to like have the optimal looking into a koi pond experience. I don't know why people would... why that would be the popular thing.
Oh,
I'm just saying that I think it has slightly more features than just a picture of a koi. It was like an interactive thing where you could...
With that being said, do you remember not too long ago when Netflix released a channel and all it was a video of a burning log fire?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
You
this
saw
was
that,
during
right?
like the kind of winter.
I believe
season,
so.
Right?
Yeah. There was one. It was just a log fire. There's another one. It was like a train ride from somewhere in Sweden to another, and it was literally just the bird's eye, not the bird's eye view, but the driver's view of the train journey. It was like 7 hours long or something, and there was no sound apart from the sound of the train. You know, and I'm like, people actually watch this?
Yeah.
They spend their money on this?
I mean, here's a question for you guys, because we're all iPhone users in the room at Momo. What has been your favorite paid app that you have?
Evernote. Mm. I've paid for Evernote in the past, yes.
That's a good one. How about you, Odds?
Evernote came free on a Samsung.
It does come free, but there's certain things that you have to pay, you know,
Paid app?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would say my yoga app.
Your yoga app?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's time for a break before we get carried away. Right, we've got 8 minutes left. What do we have? Oh, yes. If you want a feedback regarding the IBM story and how it's using its AI to predict how employees will perform in the future, that's what your bonus is going to be based on and a whole bunch of stuff. Let us know what you think. 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. We've got some Ben Folds coming up next. Han, if you're listening, this is for you. It's Rocking the Suburbs here on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury in the studio with...
Christine Wong.
And Audrey Raj.
With you for a few more minutes before we wrap up. Of course, we started off with that story about IBM using AI to predict how employees will perform. We've had some feedback. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But we got our final story that we're going to get out of the way. It's a story from the UK, but it's something that I hope is going to kind of permeate elsewhere. A story about how the UK is going to require all new homes to have electric vehicle charging capabilities. So there's a new proposal in the UK. It aims to require, as I've mentioned, electrical vehicle charging capabilities at all new homes. In addition to homes, light poles near street parking locations will also be equipped with chargers. Investment into supporting infrastructure takes steps towards the UK's effort to ban fossil fuel vehicles by 2040. Mm-hmm. They're going to retrofit and install new chargers for public use. $530 million will be used to help fund companies producing and installing the necessary hardware as part of the automated and electric vehicles bill. Charging stations will also be implemented at service stations near highways and installed at many traditional gas stations. One of the pain points, of course, of electric vehicle adoption is that recharging still takes more time than refueling with traditional gasoline or diesel. Fortunately, battery technology has actually improved over the past several years. Energy density has increased all cell life cycles, and that's been improved too. By 2024, electrical vehicles are expected to match fossil fuel vehicles in both driving range and refueling time.
In just 5 years.
In just 5 years' time. That's quite a leap, that. But the idea of, the forward thinking behind this, I think, is a real great idea. You know, the thing is with the UK, we don't have all that many new houses happening like we do here in Malaysia. You know, everywhere you go, every part of the city, there is a new condominium coming up. There's a new something coming up, you know. And I think it's we're at that stage now where we should really be thinking about doing something like that here. You know, especially if we're moving into an era where we're looking at developing a new local car. You know, if you were smart enough, you'd be thinking to yourself, you know what, why don't we just go with an electric vehicle? Why don't we be the first in Southeast Asia to have a national electric vehicle, right? If we could do that, we'd be leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else, right?
Yeah, but then there's that issue with charging stations. I mean, like, here everything is being built from the ground up, like vertically, right?
Right.
So imagine if you go, if you, every parking lot in every other condo will need to have one of these, or at least, at least 100 of these, you know?
A bunch of these,
I mean, different bays, right?
Exactly. But if you start now, you know, you can kind of, you know, future-proof yourself, and, you know, we can retrofit stuff a little bit later on. Of course, that's going to cost some money, but there's ways and means around that, as we've seen before. But I think it's a good step in the right direction.
And you have to start now. You know, if you're thinking about doing this by 2024, you have to start now.
Exactly. Chris, thoughts?
I just, you know, I think it's a really great initiative, and I always appreciate steps to try and, you know, help fix what humans have done to the environment over, you know, centuries of
abuse.
So I think it's a great step forward, and I agree with you guys in terms of, you know, if we're gonna do it, we have to do it now. There's no looking to tomorrow. It has to be now.
Right. Okay, that's all the time we have for today then, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for contributing to the show. We will be back, of course, same time, same place tomorrow at noon. Before we go though, a few things to run through. We'll quickly cover what we covered here on the show. And if you did miss any part of the show, you can, of course, download the app from the Apple App Store, which has made at least $40 billion in the last 10 years.
Or Google Play.
Or Google Play, in fact. Yes.
Don't
so
be biased.
We started off with
IBM is using its Watson AI to predict how employees will perform and then kind of show their gratitude for that. Bonuses.
We're all a little bit skeptical of this idea.
I'm not a massive fan of it. But anyways, we also talked about how Google now refers to its different assistant voices using pretty colors.
We then moved on to how AT&T wants to overhaul HBO, saying it isn't profitable enough. We're going to make more stuff.
And then we talked about how the App Store has made Apple at least $43 billion in revenue since it was created 10 years ago today. Happy birthday!
She did it.
Wrapping up, of course, with how the UK are to require all new homes to have electric vehicle charging capabilities. Right, don't go anywhere, though, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. So today marks World Population Day, and this year's theme is Family Planning is a Human Right. The Breakfast Grills discuss with their panel how family planning factors into population development and the issues that policymakers should consider when planning for Malaysia's future populace. The panel was Marcela Suazo, representative for the United Nations Population Fund for Malaysia, and Dato Dr. Kamar Ruzaman Ali. He's the president of the Federation of Reproductive Health Associations for Malaysia. That's all the time we have then, folks. We'll be back tomorrow, of course. Don't go anywhere. More stuff coming up, including some music from Alice in Chains. This is No Excuses, the unplugged version, here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.